Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston. And you're listening to Battle Red Radio. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, drunkest from all of BFG. Hey, how's it going?
Oh. Oops, sorry about that. My Bluetooth turned off. I'm here.
Yeah. Well, how's it going?
I am wonderful, lovely. I was walking into the kitchen to put something in the kitchen, and I was singing at the top of my lungs, and I scared the cat. And I just think that's a pretty good lead into the show.
Yeah, I'm kind of opposite right now. I just did some breathing exercises and meditated in memory of Arian Foster to celebrate this show. But did you know that Brock Osweiler has been the worst quarterback in the NFL this year?
Yeah, well, he's you know, depending on how you look at Hobo QB, he's at least the worst QB that still has a starting job. You know, Blaine Gabbert's got a worse QB rating. Hoba QB has a worse QB rating. But Brock Osweiler is down there with them. It's funny that I was reading an article today about, you know, Gus Bradley having to give Blake Bortles a vote of confidence. I was looking at their numbers going, damn, I take that on the team, you know. We'd be in a lot better shape than we are today. So it's pretty totes cray-cray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I'm really tired about talking about Osweiler. He stinks. He's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL this year. And, yeah, we get it. Yeah, we all know he's being paid $18 million a year to be awful. And, yeah, I played for the Broncos. He decided to sign with Houston this offseason. But instead of being with Osweiler and being really sad and moping around about him, let's instead celebrate the life of Arian Foster. He retired at the age of 30 yesterday. He wrote something really short that ended with LOL after he decided to retire from Miami. And I guess kind of the gist of it was that he's going to hopefully remember all of his – or he's going to remember all these memories as he takes it to his next stage in life, hopefully LOL. He's making a CTE joke, of course. And he already missed some time this year because of hamstring issues. It's like his body couldn't take anymore. So during his time in Houston, he had 1,454 carries for 6,472 yards, which comes up to 4.5 yards a carry. He had 85.2 yards a game and 54 touchdowns. He had four seasons with 250-plus carries, two with 300-plus, and two seasons at least 15 touchdowns. And the best game of his career came in 2010. He ran for 231 yards and three touchdowns against Peyton Manning and the Colts in Week 1. We all thought the Texans would actually make the playoffs that year, and, of course, that didn't happen. And so this franchise has been around for 15 years now. Where does Arian Foster rank on your favorite players that you watched in the Texans uniform?
No, I think not just in a Texans uniform, but just in a Houston football uniform. I would say he's probably a top 10 kind of guy. He was just so glorious to watch, especially when it was in his prime. The way that he just kind of floated, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a different running style. He was so smooth. It was like watching ice run. I think the blurb that I put in our write-up is, watching him run the football was like watching poetry run the football. It was just, there was something so different about his style. It's just beautiful. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful to watch. And you can't really say that about a bunch of running backs. You know, who are you going to say that they have a beautiful running style about? But with Arian Foster, it was true. There's my beer. That he just was beautiful running the football. And then I think, you know, I haven't read the script yet because I'm working until late and had to go run an errand. But, you know, if I had to pick my favorite Arian Foster game, it would be that Colts game where all of a sudden, here's Arian Foster, ladies and gentlemen. And it was the way he announced himself with authority. There was a lot of, you know, pearl clutching and hand-wringing about what we're going to do about the halfback position going into that season. And, you know, a lot of us who saw the last two games were like, hey, this Arian Foster guy looks pretty sweet. And we didn't address the position. And, boom, there's Arian Foster for you. And it was just – it was a beautiful game. It was one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, and that was a good point, too. I mean, entering that year, I think 2009, I started those two games, and it was awesome. And I actually went back and watched that game when I wrote that ridiculous Matt Schaub, you know, career retrospective, I went back and watched the Arian Foster game and just messed around the Game Pass. And, yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Just, like, he saw things that nobody else sees. And I guess he was kind of like a dog in that way, where if a dog enters a room, he can see an imprint of, like, every smell and every person that's been there for the last 2 weeks or whatever. And Foster's like that, where he just saw things that, you know, other humans don't see, where he could see every single hole. He made the right decisions. It's just patience, how good he is at cutting back. And, you know, you say he floated, he glided, you know, he looked like poetry. I've said the same thing on the show before. You know, I wrote the same thing in some of my articles as well. And then it's just kind of a universal opinion. Like, I went back and read, you know, some articles and some comments, and a lot of people kind of the same similar feelings that watching him run was just something different. You know, again, going back to he gloated. I'd like to call him like a specter, just like floating through the fog. And the thing about him that was really cool too, just like his running style, where he was really vertical. Like, he was really kind of stand up, kind of like how Adrian Peterson is, where he's like a real stand up runner. And there's just such like a tinge of just like taunting in the way he ran. And then, I mean, the way he was able to play once he lost his speed too, after his first 2 or 3 years of those carries, you know, he didn't have that same burst and same speed. But again, just like the intelligence and that cutback ability and vision, let him have a much longer career than he probably should have based on how much he was hit, what, you know, how much he was overworked as well too. But when it comes to Texans players, I mean, it has to be Watt number one, and then Andre Johnson two, and then Arian Foster three. But I mean, he was really just spectacular and just a lot of fun to watch for his entire career. And we're very lucky to have the chance to watch him for in a Texans uniform. We got to watch him every Sunday instead of just clips and, you know, highlights here and there.
Yeah, and I'd agree with you on that listing. And, you know, going back even farther to the Oilers, you know, I mean, he's got to be, you know, up there with the guys, like, for me, like, you know, Earl and Robert Brazil and Ray Childress and Ernest Givens and those kinds of guys who were just so – there was something so special about them. They were just transcendental at their positions, and it just transcendental seems to be like the perfect word to describe Arian Foster. I think he'd be happy with that description.
Yeah. Yeah. I always love that word too. Whenever you're talking about a player who like over exceeds his teammates. And so he had really good blocking, but he was able to do so much more than his blocking because of his ability. And so that's a perfect word for him as well.
Yeah. And I think, we could call him transcendental. And then of course he'd immediately squawk at us. In his pterodactyl speak, so that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know he's retired for this year, and it's starting to kind of get weird now for Texans fans because those first two playoff teams, you know, 2011, 2012, it was kind of a slow build up to his teams, you know, in 2009, 2010, and even though it was only 4 years ago, some of these players are starting to get phased out of the league. You know, Andre Johnson's on his last wheels, Arian Foster retired, Jonathan Joseph's getting older, Brian Cushing's getting older. You know, there's your Pro Bowl guard, Wade Smith, isn't in the league anymore. Same with Brazil. Same with Seth Myers. There's a lot of these sort of guys that, like, you know, and a lot from these teams that we fell in love with, and they're already starting to kind of, you know, get out of the league. Like, they're starting to disappear and, you know, go away. And I think that's kind of the saddest thing about football. It's that, you know, these teams that you watch are very short-lived, and they're very great for, like, a small moment of time. Aside from quarterback and head coach, everybody else is kind of expendable, and they kind of come and go really quickly. And so I just love the player's career. And so, like, you really enjoy, you fall in love with these players and teams, but you only get 2 or 3 years out of them, and then everything else completely changes so fast. And so I wish you could watch Arian play for 10 fully healthy seasons because he was so special. And instead, he got 76 games in 7 seasons. And you can compare that to sports like basketball and baseball, where you can watch the same guy play at a high level for 15 years, and it's just not like that in football at all.
No, it's not. And it's funny, you know, you start talking about that. When you think of a guy, I mean, like, Icky Woods is the guy who immediately comes to mind. He had one great season, then he hurt his knee and was done. You know, that's just kind of – that's really very much a football kind of thing. Yes, it occasionally happens with pitchers and baseball. You know, you have your Herb Score type events. But it's more of a football thing where one season, big injury, gone forever. And so it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah, tough. In a way, it's just really – tough to because they're so fleeting. It's very different. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I was kind of say the same thing. And also, like, we're not looking at like something that happened 10 years ago. This is 4 years ago. This is kind of like it's supposed to be the prime for a lot of these guys' careers. But already 4 years after the, you know, his first two playoff teams and what possibly could have been a championship team in 11. You know, they're all kind of just gone. You know, they're all, I think, you know, Watt's kind of the one guy who's really performing at a high level, you know, off that 2011 team. And everybody else is just kind of just out there, just floating around on different teams and squads and kind of making, I guess Joseph's another guy too. And if I want to sit down and write everything out, I can figure out the rest of it. But those are really like the only two guys who really come to mind. And yeah, it just changed so quickly in the NFL, and these guys just play for such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I have one other thing I was thinking about the other day that was funny is, you know, I remember I did a draft party when Dwayne Brown was drafted, and it seems like, oh, that was what, 2 or 3 years ago? No. No, it's not.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was 08 or something.
I'm old.
Yeah.
I'm old.
Well, that was sad, you know, that was sad. And it's just also weird, too, just when you think about how close to that seems, you know, that was like, you know, 2011, 2012, and it's been 4 years, even then, it's kind of a weird thing as well, too. And, you know, that's sad, and it's a bummer, but somehow Brock Osweiler's performance could possibly even be sadder. And I'm just, like, at a loss of words right now. I've thought so much about his play. I wrote, you know, a 5,000-word film article about why this offense is bad. We talked about at least 15 minutes on every single one of these podcasts because it's the most important decision the Texans have made since probably, you know, firing Gary Kubiak in 2013. And then you can probably go before that and say not having a quarterback replacement for Schaub. And, you know, in this game, he was 22 for 41, and he threw for 131 yards. Now, again, he threw the ball 41 times and threw for just 131 yards. Now, this comes out to 3.2 yards an attempt, 5.95 yards of completion. He was 0 for 8 on passes farther than 15 yards on the field. His longest pass was 13 yards. He threw the ball 41 times again for less than 200 yards. I just still can't get over that. He was sacked just once. And he also threw a fumble for 7 yards. That was probably longer than all of his other than the average of his completions was that fumble he threw. And so was this worse than the Fitzpatrick six interception game earlier this year?
No, nothing can beat that. I mean, that's like even with the pick fumble, that, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing 6 interceptions is just, you know, you can't get – he went full Hoyer, and you just don't do full Hoyer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, but at least the Jets were kind of in a position to win that game. And this Texans game, there really wasn't any opportunity. I thought they were actually going to come back and win. So I think this is kind of worse just because at least Fitzpatrick pushed the ball downfield and made some throws to Brandon Marshall. Fitzpatrick made 0 throws in this game. Like, there are 0 times where he completed a pass like, oh, that was a nice throw there. There's none of it. His biggest play was a pass interference penalty to Steven Anderson on a fade against T.J. Ward. And so I think this is even worse. I understand that 6 interceptions is, you know, hilarious and a lot different. But Fitzpatrick made some throws, made some scrambles. And Brock Osweiler is pretty much like a 13-year-old in this game where you're in middle school and you throw the ball once if you're down or if you're, like, trying to win the game at the end of it. Otherwise, I think you just roll out and so you just run the ball over and over and over again. Like, it was like watching, you know, Eisenhower Middle School or something like that. It was just so remarkably bad. And, you know, I do know that the Broncos have a great defense. They were 5th in passing DVOA in this game. And this was 2% behind Arizona. It's like, what do they do to turn Osweiler into just this, you know, awful, awful quarterback?
This is a big deal, right, at this point in time. Is what is going on with Brock Osweiler? Here's what I see. I see a guy right now who is absolutely terrified. He's terrified to make throws. He's terrified to make mistakes. You know, it's often, you know, the pundits like to talk about how the NFL is a short-term memory kind of league. And Brock right now is refusing to try to push the ball downfield. His longest completion, he had a couple 13-yarders yesterday. That's just unacceptable. I mean, that should be – you should be able to get a 13-yard completion off a slant with a pick. And we can't even do that. It's – I think the number to focus on yesterday is really that the 5.95 yards per completion. 5.95 yards per completion. That's not even a good yards per attempt number. So, and here's the other big deal going back to last night. Wade Phillips did Wade Phillips things, which means he kept to his plan. What he loves to do is he likes to put man coverage with a single safety high. What had been killing Osweiler to start the season was that, or, you know, where he was successful was against man coverage, single safety high. And Wade said, okay, I'm going to put Tlaib on the left, Chris Harris on the right. I'm going to put Stewart in deep safety. Beat me. And Brock couldn't. So Wade Phillips basically taunted Brock Osweiler the entire game by giving him the defense he wanted to see. So it was, you know, it was a terrible game in so many ways, not pushing the ball down the field. Guys weren't getting open. The offensive line wasn't half bad. They weren't disastrous. But at some point, you know, not even David Carr was this rattled. I mean, he's already gone past David Carr, and it's seven freaking games into the season. So it's this is a big, big issue right now, and that's why, you know, when you start seeing calls for Tom Savage, what does it take to get Brock Osweiler out of this? And I don't know. Do you just take him outside and just have him, you know, have him throw down the field for 3 or 4 days in a row so he actually gets used to it again? I don't know. I have no answer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, as far as the with the Broncos field scheme, you exactly said it. They put a lot of press man coverage, and that's kind of the problem with Osweiler, is that his ball placement is just horrible. His accuracy is really bad. He has a good, strong arm. He can push the ball downfield, but the accuracy isn't there. And so you're just kind of like taunting him at that point when you play press man coverage, because he can't make those tight little throws. And again, like he did attempt to throw the ball down deep. I mean, he took 8 shots over 15 yards and completed 0 of them. And the problem I saw was he was overthrowing one, because it seems like he's afraid to throw interceptions. And then two, every time they were going downfield, there was double coverage there. The safety was always attacking and going to that one guy. And so, I mean, it was hard to tell from the broadcast, but it just seemed like when they were going downfield, it was all play action. They were kind of trying to manufacture deep passes, and they were only having one guy go deep. And when you're going to get the single high safety, who's very good, he's going to be able to read that, come over, and be able to help out nearly every time. And they're just like, the scheme wasn't there really to help them out too when it comes to the deep passing as well. And so, I mean, you were right about this, about the defensive scheme. There's not much more I have to add to that. But offensively, I do think I kind of want to see some other things different. I know I touched on my article where I wanted to see more kind of rub routes and crossing routes if they're going to be playing zone to, or if they're going to play man coverage to kind of open that sort of stuff up. You know, if you're playing press man coverage, run some rub routes, you know, try to get Braxton Miller more involved. I know a lot of that problems is kind of the time position, but C.J. Fedoris is pretty good too, so you can run that with him. Will Fuller is perfect for rub routes at his speed. He can catch a slant and just take off down the field. And they haven't done that. And then I know Dominic Bosworth wrote the All-22 article, and the one thing I took away from his piece was running play-action passes, throw it intermediately. And we saw it work so often and so well with Kubiak and Schaub, where they were just the masters of running intermediate play-action, where you're running a post to the tight end for 15 yards, not necessarily hitting 45-yard deep downfield throws. And we're not seeing that at all with these play-action passes. It's, you know, pick this handoff, stand there, and throw the ball 45 fields, overthrowing the guy because you're afraid through the interception. And that's a big problem too. And so I think also, you know, I think if I had to give blame to it, I would say it's like 75% Osweiler. But the coaching staff still isn't doing enough of a good job to hit him open throws and kind of get him things going. Their opportunity to try to get him open throws is throwing flat routes to DeAndre Hopkins, throwing, you know, just short little stuff on – throwing short outs and throwing short swing passes and that sort of thing. But again, that's why you end up with the yards per catch that again is, you know, less than 6, which is just incredible.
I think the most disturbing thing about the game yesterday was really the incredible lack of accuracy, because if you have not been on the Brock bandwagon like I've, you know, been on that, where he's gonna, where he really needed to prove to me that he was capable of doing this. That his accuracy is incredibly poor. 22 for 41. Now on the season, he is. I'm sorry, I had it up a moment ago. Phrasing 58.2% amongst the worst in the league. But look, here's the fact: you can't be successful for a quarter. Go ahead.
And also, his yards per attempt too. You know, it's not only 58%, but 58%. He's like last in the league yards per attempt, and that's kind of the problem there. Is that if you, with the amount, like Matthew Stafford, for example. He's averaging 7.6 yards per attempt, but he's completing 70% of his passes. And those are two completely entirely different things, you know?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, and I was going to get to that about how Stafford's been so eerily accurate this year. I'll get to that later. But, you're right. So this is – I see this more as a twofold problem. We can say, yes, this is Brock Osweiler, but we have other decisions that are – kind of giving us a clue about Osweiler, and that's number one. I think it's time to dispel the notion that Bill O'Brien is any sort of QB whisperer. It's done. Okay, let's just bury that lead because it's not true, and we got to get past it. Number two, I don't think that Bill O'Brien is the offensive genius we thought he was. And then I just want everybody who's listening to picture Fulmer spinning in a circle from the last exit to Springfield episode. So, you know, I think that the scheme sucks. Brock is not being put in a position to win. So when you say you put it on Osweiler, I put it on Bill O'Brien. But I think, you know what, if you can break it down however you want to, the fact is that those two guys aren't getting it done on a week-to-week basis offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when it comes to Brockometer, so we have Brock Bottom, Ryan Weiler, Brock Yoker, Glock Osweiler, and God Waller. Where do you have him after this game?
I think he's pretty clearly at Brock Bottom. I mean, we're at DEFCON 5 when it comes to his play. I almost put a cuss word in there, and I remember, hi, Texan might be listening with his family, gathered around the podcast, big radio in their living room by the glow of the podcasting radio. He's definitely a Brock Bottom. I just don't know how much, you know, unless you're going to throw 6 interceptions, I don't know how much worse of a game you could have. And let's face it, he threw a pick fumble, and he also should have had the first pass of the game should have been intercepted by Ward, but the pass was so bad, Ward missed it. So it was, you know, there should have been more damage done to him. It's just funny that there wasn't. This is a really bad situation offensively. It's a nightmare. And then you go back and look. Oh, never mind. I'm going to shut up because we've got more stuff to carry in at 7:20.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I haven't Ron Waller just because I know we can talk about this all day. I haven't Ron Waller just because he played very good defense. And I think he's a pick six away from Brock Bottom. I think as soon as he throws that pick six, that's an ever. Everybody's going to lose it. And I'm kind of welcoming the pick six, too, because it means he's actually, like, taking chances. I think he's just so afraid to make mistakes right now. Like, he's so afraid of throwing interceptions. He's so afraid of, you know, missing. I just think he doesn't trust his accuracy whatsoever. And, I mean, I haven't run Waller, but I'm a pick six away. Or having a game like this against a terrible defense like the Lions from going all the way to Brock Bottom. And, again, thanks for that. Idea for a Texan, and did you see all the Houston sports writers who were all using Brock Bottom? And I don't know if we did something like that, BRB, or if it just kind of entered our cultural, the collective consciousness as soon as Uproot Texan threw it out there. But it's everywhere now, so that's kind of fun to see. Also, the other thing that I really like about Brock Osweiler is he's done the impossible, or he can't throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. And DeAndre Hopkins is the third best receiver in the NFL last year, taking passes from guys like Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett. You know, we know the list. And this game, he had 5 catches on 12 targets for 36 yards. Now, again, that's 5 catches on 12 targets for 36 yards. So they're getting 3 yards an attempt to DeAndre Hopkins, who's a, you know, top 5 wide receiver in the NFL. And on the season, he has 36 catches on 69 targets for 390 yards. And that's 10.8 yards per catch when you compare that to his average of 14.3. So, like, how bad do you feel for Hopkins? Like, he's doing that Andre Johnson thing where he just looks so miserable out there. It was like watching Andre Johnson 13 having to, you know, fight Matt Schaub and catch passes from Case Keenum.
It's really disturbing because this is – we talked about this quite a bit on the listserv today. So what does this mean for DeAndre Hopkins? So this is bad things. He is going to hit the Andre Johnson, I'm pissed, I'm out, point after he's we have the 5th-year option, and then we'll be able to put the franchise tag on him. After that, he's gone. I just don't see, and that's a big deal because, you know, Andre Johnson put up with the empty promises and all that junk, and DeAndre Hopkins came in, and he's seeing the same thing. It's like an instant replay of Andre Johnson's career. He's not going to be motivated to stay at all. And I just can't say enough about that. You know, this comes back. This goes all the way back to 2012, this QB problem. And then we pissed away Texan. And we gave away a chance in 2014 to address it by taking a Bortles or a Carr or a Bridgewater. It's just this is a big deal at this point, the lack of production from DeAndre Hopkins, because the guy's going to say, outsies, because you guys – can't get your quarterback situation under control. Because let's be honest here, he has basically signed to a 2-year contract. So Bill O'Brien has basically said, I need 2 years to coach this guy up and to prove that he's good. And that's what Uncle Bob is going to say is like, you know, and when he reevaluates the team this year, hey, Bob, what has Brock Osweiler done for me? And the only thing I can think that Bob's going to do at this point is shrug emoji, right? So that's 2 more years. Or that's going to be 1 more year, 2017, of Brock Osweiler spaghetti arming the ball down the field because he doesn't trust his arm or his arm strength or his accuracy. So this is a big problem in a lot of different ways, unfortunately. And I don't know how you Control-Z undo this issue. And this really – point being, this really revolves around DeAndre Hopkins right now. Look, the guy can catch anything within a zip code, but he's not even being given that opportunity right now. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. And I think my thing with Hopkins, too, goes back to what we talked about Arian Foster. We're like, we were very lucky to be able to get DeAndre Hopkins the 21st pick. We're very lucky to be able to watch him play every Sunday. And just not watch him be able to do things like leap over Patman Jones and catch fades to win games. Be able to have him make these great catches and these, you know, great plays that he's used to seeing. Like the helmet catch against the Jaguars. Like even that's not even there at all right now. And he still has the ability to get open, but it's so many like comebacks and curls because he's just trying to create so many easy, safe throws for Osweiler. And it's just been so frustrating, just like disheartening to watch. And again, we have a limited amount of time to watch Hopkins play football, and we're just seeing kind of just like the worst of it. And it's been just, you know, so frustrating and gross to see. The other thing, going back to the scheme and game plan, was that the Texans ran the ball really well in this game. Both Alfred Blue and Lamar Miller had 11 carries for at least 60 yards. Together, they averaged 5.6 yards a carry, but they only had 22 attempts, and Osweiler had 41 attempts. O'Brien, he really tried to force the passing rhythm. And he did this by throwing on easier shots, like 3rd and 1. He was throwing on 2nd and 4, leading to incompletion. And then there's another incompletion on 3rd and 4, so the punts. And the other problem with it was that the Broncos are mediocre at stopping the run. They're great at stopping the pass. And, like, they didn't do what they were best at against this defense. So did you feel they didn't run the ball enough as well, too?
Once again, it goes back to putting your quarterback in a position to succeed. And I think this game is very clearly an example of Bill O'Brien's inability to do that for Brock Osweiler. Your guys are averaging over 5 yards a carry. Your quarterback is averaging 2 yards per attempt. Which one should you do? I mean, really, which one should you do? Even when we had to come back, which one should you do? Let the guy who's struggling horribly continue to try to chunk the ball down the field and get lucky, or should you go back to what's working for you? If you sound like I'm getting pretty fired up about that, you're right. Because what is the thought process if you're Bill O'Brien? Well, we're kicking field goals, but now we're going to make Brock Osweiler throw the ball down the field. That doesn't work. You know, when your quarterback is not playing well, but your guys are making yards and chunk yards at times, you got to go back to that. So the game plan, the weighting of run plays to pass plays was poor. If you're a Texans fan, you have to look at games like that and say, what is Bill O'Brien thinking? Because that is not what you expect from an NFL quality coach. Even if you're behind, one thing is working, one thing's not. Go with the thing that's working.
Yeah, it's not they fell behind like by a super whole lot, you know. They were down by one possession at time too, and they still went away from the run really early as well. And then you kind of see the Broncos. The Broncos had a lot of success running the ball up the middle. And Trevor Siemian only threw the ball 25 times. Osweiler threw the ball 42 times. They stuck with the run the entire game. Even though they went down, you know, 6-0, they didn't move away from it. They were controlled the entire time. And that was my bigger problem than, you know, I'm talking about how, yeah, they're throwing play action, they're trying to manufacture deep passes out of it. They're not running enough rubber routes to get man coverage to create open throws to Osweiler. My biggest problem in this game is just they didn't run the ball enough. This is the type of game where that's not what the Broncos are good at this year. They lost Malik Jackson. They lost Dan Trevathan. They've had trouble all year stopping the run. And it's just sitting there for you to just be able to run the ball 40 times against this team and run the ball for 200 yards. And that's why you sign Lamar Miller for a game like this. That's why you give Alfred Blue you know, 15 carries as well. And the whole thing was set up there for them to do it, and they just didn't do it. And like I said, they just threw in a lot of situations where they shouldn't. I know in the Hair of the Dog, I just couldn't believe they threw the ball in third and one, or that third and three they threw on, where they threw a one-yard pass to Will Fuller on third and three. And just like things like that are just so unbelievable and just so stupid. And you can't manufacture and put together good drives if you're just going completely away from what's going well and then doing things that aren't because you're trying to, you know, handhold Brock Osweiler to the finish line, you know?
Yeah, I like what Uprooted Texan said is, I'll show you kitten holes, or, you know, Brock and Bill, they were trying to make the point, I'll show you kitten holes that we made the right choice. My question for you is, because I think that's a great point, was having Brock Osweiler throw the ball 41 freaking times during the game, was this an ego trip by Bill O'Brien to say I was right and you were wrong?
I don't necessarily think so. I think he's just trying to have Osweiler throw the ball when he's in a more advantageous situation because he's been so bad the other times. And so they're limiting the offense and leading first downs on the table because of it. I don't necessarily think he was trying to, you know, throw that in that way. I think you win the football game by doing that, not by Brock Osweiler throwing for 250 yards, which would be amazing if he threw for 250 yards on 40 pass attempts.
Yeah, I think we'd all die of strokes at that point in time.
It really is getting so unbelievable. So why the run game works so well is the offensive line starting to gel now. Is Alfred Blue getting carries and making Lamar fresh? Is that a good thing? Is Lamar Miller finally breaking tackles? Or is this just kind of a mediocre, you know, defensive front?
I think it's a combination. We're getting some big holes, but the play calling was interesting. The offensive rush play calling was fine at times. We were doing a good job pulling tight ends, pulling guards, and creating space for running backs to run. But as you said earlier, you know, this is also a team that lost Danny Trevathan, that lost Malik Jackson, that is playing Jared Crick. We know how bad he is. So, you know, it's a combination of all of those things that, you know, when you have Jared Crick out there trying to play run defense, and then you know bad things are going to happen. So, you know, Alfred Blue is not a good running back, but he's good enough to go out there and give you this kind of, you know, he can give you 10 or 12 rushes a game to keep Lamar Miller a little bit more fresh. That was a big concern of mine heading as the season's gone on, is that Lamar Miller is collecting carries like, you know, people collect baseball cards. You can't do that to this guy and expect him to stay fresh all year. He's never had, I mean, everybody knows there's a 300 rush rule, right? Don't want your running back getting over 300 rushes, especially over 320, because nothing ever good happens after that. So, you know, I like seeing it. I like seeing a little bit more of a split. And the fact is that Alfred Blue has shown a little bit more shake than Lamar Miller at times this year. So that's been good. But, yeah, I think that, you know, kind of a perfect storm of really pretty bad defensive line, not having quite the same skill at linebackers they had last year, and then the offensive line actually doing a pretty good job creating holes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I completely agree with that, too, with Alfred Blue. I don't like Alfred Blue. I think he's a plotter. But he has gotten a little bit better. He's looking a lot faster this year. And so I don't know how it can be 2016 and you're still having your starting running back get 30 carries a game. Like, give him 20. Give Alfred Blue 10 or 15. If you're going to run the ball 40 times a game, Alfred Blue should get 15. Tyler Irvin should get like 5, or I guess Grimes. So Irvin should get like 5, and then Miller should get 20. You know, just make sure that you keep these guys fresh throughout the season instead of just running them into the ground over and over and over again. And also in this game, Pro Football Focus came with their grades immediately afterwards, and Xavier Suafield led the team, had the highest grade in the entire offense, like 84.2. And so I told you, there's your numerical proof, there's your analytics that Xavier Suafield is, you know, at least serviceable.
Yeah. he did have a good game yesterday. Well, I do have to admit that he did have a good game. Very solid. The offensive line play as a whole wasn't horrible. I mean, they did a good job against the pass rush, and it was not a bad game. That game was not about the offensive line. That game was about Brock Osweiler and inability for receivers to get open. Go ahead.
Yeah, and going back to Osweiler one last time, this has been really good pass protection he's had. The Texans are, you know, towards the bottom of the league in pressure rate, and he has plenty of time to throw the ball. It's just, it's all on him. You can't blame the offensive line whatsoever. And so going back to kind of the bummers, we talked about some blunders as well. And I think that Osweiler, you know, throw fumble was one of the funniest things I've ever seen too, and just really kind of summed up this game. But he fumbled the ball. Well, he fumbled the ball farther than his average completion, which is just unbelievable. But I'll just never forget that. I'll be taking a dump tomorrow and just start laughing, thinking about that. That's a fact in the universe. But Jarek Newton, our favorite right tackle, his knees turned to jelly and both of his patellar tendons torn. Was this one of the worst injuries you've ever seen? And the other thing about that was really strange was, like, it wasn't, like, gruesome at all. It just looked like he was a giant elephant that where the tranquilizer just kicked in and he just buckled and fell over. Like, what did you see on that play?
It reminded me of, what was the year that I found? Was it 89? Wendell Davis, 93, I'm sorry. Wendell Davis, wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, was playing a game at in Philly, with Philly's infamous turf at that time, which was just horrible, that he went up to go catch a pass, and when he went to jump, his cleats kind of got caught a little bit oddly in the AstroTurf, and he tore both of his patellar tendons on the play. That's what it reminded me of. It was a little bit different because it was on grass, but it just looked like the way that when he went to move to block Von Miller, that his feet simply moved too fast for the rest of his body. And that's what happened. I mean, I'm speculating. That makes me a terrible human being, and I apologize. That's what it looked like. But there are certain injuries now, as I think about through the years, you know, there aren't many that were worse than that. Because, you know, as soon as it happened, I was just like, oh, my gosh, he tore both ACLs was my immediate reaction. So I'm not surprised it was both patellar tendons are both right there together, right? One of them's just on the inside. One of them's more on the surface. But you knew something really bad had happened. And all I can say is that, I mean, dude's going to be in a wheelchair is how bad it is. Wendell Davis never played another snap again, if I remember correctly. This is not really a thing you come back from. This really isn't. I wish him all the best in the world. I would love to see him back, but all of a sudden now we are missing a right tackle and one who is at least average, and it's a big deal. But I just can't say enough. Good luck, Derek. I hope my love gets to you. My best wishes get to you somehow because, man, that was – oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, we shall send some cards over to Dave. I'm sure they'll get to him. And yeah, I mean, I was reading today. I have no idea what the patellar tendon or how it works does or how the injury works. And I guess it's what holds your kneecap to your knee from like your quadricep. And so whenever you tear it, that tendon pretty much just kind of rips off and kind of comes all the way up into your leg, up into your quad. And also the stronger you are, the bigger that pull is and the more painful it is. And so pretty much he had his entire knee get ripped open from the inside out. We can get Rivers to give some Freddie letters over to Derek Newton and send some love that way. But this is a question from Nashmeister. He said, forgetting big name trades like Joe Thomas or Staley, are there any late round pick or player deals you'd like to see this team pursue? He said, I saw Denver trade fifth round pick to New England for a young backup tight end with 2.5 years team control remaining, as well the Lions trade Kyle Vandal, who's been terrible this year to the Patriots. And instead of identifying those players, which position group would you want to have shore up on the Texans? And which other teams do you think have depth in the area, maybe have a quality player buried beneath from the depth chart? And so for me, there's no really known names that stick out. But when it comes to Derek Newton, you know, Chris Clark is a fine third tackle. You want more at left tackle because he's a much better pass blocker than run blocker. And you're going to lose a lot in the run game, especially when you have Jeff Allen and Chris Clark on the right side. And I don't know how they're going to get any movement all over there. But there's really no name or anybody that I can really think of at all that would be a good, like, former first or second round pick that hasn't just worked out that Houston can maybe get for a fifth round pick. Is there anybody at all that you can think of?
No, the only main name that comes to my mind is Joe Thomas. And here's the reason why is if you've got a guy, here's the difference. This isn't an NFL thing, right? You don't see a whole lot of trades in the NFL, and there's several reasons for that. But a big part of it is that where there's a value, like a Joe Thomas kind of guy, they're going to want a first-round pick for him. And then Joe Thomas is going to cost you a first-round pick. He's going to cost you a big hit against your cap. So there aren't many teams that are going to be willing to trade you an up-and-coming right tackle that isn't going to be super expensive because, number one, they probably got the guy locked up for 2 or 3 more years. So there is a lot of financial security in that decision. And number two, why are you going to trade an up-and-coming right tackle for a first-round pick? Maybe for a first-round pick you do, But, you know, who's going to trade a first-round pick for a right tackle? So that's why it's only the guys like Joe Staley and Joe Thomas who are going to be available, is because teams don't trade those guys that are good enough, number one, to start for you,
mm-hmm.
and who are locked up for two or three or four more years. So that's why those types of trades don't happen. I think best-case scenario is we get an older backup coming kind of guy. I hate to throw his name out there, but Jake Fisher. Jaguars are probably going to trade him within the division, but that's the kind of guy that you're looking at. You're looking at a guy who's not very good, who's going to have a year left on the contract or have a big contract, but your upgrade from Chris Clark is not going to be big enough to make that worth your while, especially if you have to give up a second-round pick for Jake Fisher, then goodness gracious. You know, that's a big deal. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and also, I mean, where this team is at now, the draft picks are a lot more important this year than getting some sort of, you know, veteran to shore position. I mean, especially in the NFL where it takes some time to, you know, start playing well together. And so I don't think there's anybody immediately that will be able to help this team out whatsoever that's worth even getting the fifth-round pick for. That sticks out to me. So we're going to move on to the defense. And holy crap, you know, A.J. Bouye, you know, with Kevin Johnson out, he was the quarterback number two spot. He made play after play after play. I think in like the first quarter, he had five different plays on the ball, made tackles to stop first downs, knocked some passes away, and he was just, you know, remarkable. So what do you see with A.J. Bouye these, you know, past few weeks?
A.J. Bouye, I think he's made of glue. I mean, maybe not his hands, as Uprooted Texan so kindly pointed out, jerk face, but he just seems to be made of glue. He is all over. It does not matter who you are. You might be Emmanuel Sanders. You might be Demaryius Thomas. You might be Travis Kelce. A.J. Bouye does not care. He is going to cover you well, and you know you're going to get nothing, and you're going to like it. he seems really, really, really quick this year, really quick twitch. I think putting him in the slot where he could cover tight ends earlier in the season really got his confidence up and going. When he normally would play outside where that was quote-unquote his strength, was playing on the outside, he got burned quite a bit. Now that he's on the inside and he was able to cover tight ends, all of a sudden he's like, okay, I can ball. And now he's just destroying everybody. Man, that's been fun watching A.J. Bouye the last probably 5 weeks or so. He is just absolutely balling right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you go by a success rate, he's in the team. I think his success rate last year was 80%, and they don't have the numbers out just yet because they played on Monday Night Football. But I assume they probably jumped up to 85% or so. And so I'm sure he might. And I know Pro Football Focus has him as the number one cornerback according to their ratings in the NFL, which is just, you know, remarkable. And he's, you know, he's been kind of a revelation this year. And so for past that, you know, the Broncos had a really Broncos game. They ran the ball very well up the middle. Simeon, I think, had 25 completions or 25 attempts. He threw for less than 200 yards. He threw for one touchdown. And I think I mentioned this earlier, but again, like, that's how you have a game plan set up where the Texans, you run the ball well up the interior. And so instead of just trying to force feed Simeon throws and then you try to open up things for him like that, they just did what stuck. They ran the ball over and over and again. And so in this game, they had 35 carries for 190 yards and two touchdowns. And more specifically, they ran the ball up the middle really well. They ran the ball up the middle 12 times for 6.16 yards a carry. I believe C.J. Anderson had 8 carries for like 60 yards up the middle. And I think Booker had 4 for, you know, 20-something. So, like, they really hammered the middle of the field. And so, like, is this the end of you? Is this an idea that, you know, Vince Wilfork's playing okay? And then when it came to the run game, was it like a defensive line issue where they weren't getting enough push at all and they were getting driven back? Or is it just the linebackers getting blocked to the second level? What did you see from the broadcast?
I think the biggest number one takeaway I took from the game as far as the run D is that as good as J.J. Watt is getting it to the quarterback on the pass rush, he is much more valuable against the run. And sounds counterintuitive. I get it. You don't draft guys number one to stop the run. I'm talking to you, Jadeveon Clowney. But he is so good. He takes up two guys. Even on the run, he takes up two guys. Now teams are facing a Vince Wilfork who is getting probably twice as many snaps as he should be getting, not because he's bad necessarily, but because he gets tired. So now he's getting way too many snaps. Number two, We're throwing Christian Covington out there. That's not his strength. We're throwing Brandon Dunn out there, who was awful last night. Brandon Dunn was really terrible last night. And then DJ Reader didn't do a good job last night either. So, you know, and of course, Antonio Smith got 10 snaps, and we know he's never been good against the rush. So you're talking about a team full of guys who can't stop the run, your defensive line who can't stop the run. So all of a sudden, you have guys that are able to get not only through that first level, because you only need to block Brandon Dunn with one guy, or maybe just one arm, and you can go to the next level and hit a second guy. So that's what I saw yesterday, is that we don't have a talent level on our defensive line unless Clowney is playing defensive end in the base 3-4. We don't have a single guy who's even remotely competent against the run. And Vince Wilfork looks absolutely done at this point. He played a lot better in the first couple of games. But now he's having to get 60% of snaps of games because there's no J.J. Watt anymore. And people have to pick up those snaps. And unfortunately, a lot of that's coming down to Wilfork. The defensive rush was terrible yesterday. And there's just no nice way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, way I watch the game to see how the offensive lines and defense lines are playing the rush is I just look and see where the line of scrimmage is. So like if you have the game recorded, you can just pause it by the time the running back is about to hit the hole and just look and see where the line of scrimmage is after the snap. And so consistently in that game last night, they're getting driven back 2 or 3 yards. And so now the linebacker has no vision to see where the running back is. The guy coming off the double team has much shorter paths than linebacker, and so you have less of the chance of him, you know, having to speed up over there, having to take longer strides. He's able to be a lot more control in that sort of ways, and just makes life miserable for your linebackers. I know McKinney really didn't do anything at all in this game because Will Forker's driven back a lot. They got some low on the second level too. And so that was why I saw it as more of a defensive line problem, linebacker problem. And then again, going to the defensive line, this is one of the things we talked about during the season, was that this is a really highly talented team. You know, it has top line talent in a lot of these positions, but it lacks depth. And so what's going to happen to the defensive line if J.J. Watt gets injured? Well, we've seen it so far. They're not able to generate any pass rush from their defensive line at all. All their pass rush is coming from the exterior and from, you know, the stunts in the interior. And then the run game, they can't stop the run very well because they're getting driven back off the ball. And so, like, Clowney's the only good run defender, but he's not that good at the point of attack. He's good at chasing from the backside. But you can run the ball at Clowney and have success at that. But, again, like, what he's good at doing is, like, fighting pullers and taking on pullers, and then swimming over real quick, and then you're pursuing from the backside. But he's not very good at stopping the run as the terrain at him. And so I think that's what you're seeing. You're seeing a defensive line that's missing J.J. Watt that doesn't have the depth behind it to make up for his absence.
Yeah, and let's give credit where it's due, too, that Devontae Booker and C.J. Anderson are very good running backs. So you have to give credit where it's due. They got the Broncos aren't the best at the offensive line, but you know, you got Booker and CJ Anderson, they can do things. And I would just like to thank you again for that CJ Anderson for Antonio Brown trade, especially.
And he was scored 20 points last week.
Hey, you know, good for you, because Devontae Booker is getting more snaps, and I have him on my team.
That's fun. but also, I wrote about the Broncos offensive line in week one. And I was really surprised how well they play. Like, Russell Okung is a bad man in the run game, especially blocking linebackers. That center, Matt Paradis, is really good too. Any Jankovic or Janovic, like, when you draft a fullback, that's what you want. You don't want Jay Prosh. You want that guy. And that guy constantly beat Thomas Davis in week one, and he could actually run the ball too. He caught a swing pass for a first down that game, and so he's a lot of fun to watch as well. And so the Broncos really crafted a good offensive line, a lot of spare parts, and they're a lot better than what their names say. And again, like, it comes back to the outside zone. Like, if you have guys who can hit the outside shoulder, if you have guys who can get to the second level, you can do a lot with the little. And the Broncos have really shown that this year too, as well.
Yeah, and that's another. Oh my goodness, I could so go off on this. That's another reason you gotta like Gary Kubiak's scheme, is because he simplifies things. Go out, you block the guy in front of you. That's your zone blocking. That's what you do. Block the guy in front of you and let your your running back hit the holes that are available to them. And it's so simple. It's so freaking simple, and it's easy to be successful when you're simple. And it's, oh, my goodness, instead of this 11-dimensional chess that Bill O'Brien insists on playing. I miss you, Gary.
Yeah.
Come back, baby.
Yeah, and I talked about, you know, 3 weeks ago how I think Gary Kubiak's a much better head coach than Bill O'Brien. And I think that's also kind of the problem with, like, with the All-22 with analytics now, is that even as fans and, you know, people who write and all that about the game, they want to make a lot of stuff a lot more complicated than it needs to be because you have so much more information out there. And also, if you sound a lot smarter, more people are going to read you. They're going to think that you know more. But, like, a lot of the stuff is kind of simple. You know, it's like with Oswald, like, he's just not making throws. It doesn't matter what the schemes or what you're doing. Like, if you're not making throws, that's a problem. And it comes with Kubiak's offense. It's like, yeah, Vince Wilfork's there. We get a lot of movement in the front. Let's just keep running the ball up the middle over and over again and have Simeon hit Emmanuel Sanders, you know, two or three times, and we'll win this game and go home and win 24-9 and not really break a sweat on the fourth quarter. And so it's just like execution is so much more important than scheme and just doing your job well and doing it right. And instead we have to turn this into, oh, look how advanced these pass concepts are. Look at this, look at this, look at this. And then you don't even know who you are anymore. And then you're throwing for, you know, less than 6 yards of completion. Or I guess I should say 6.5 yards of completion. Or 6.9.
So
it doesn't matter. You can say any number less than 7. But yeah, I buy that. I don't have to look any of that up. And so what was your favorite J.J. Watt play? What was your – I said that terribly wrong. What was your J.J. Watt favorite defensive play of the game?
I honestly, A.J. Bouye was all over the place. I don't know if I could say it was a play, but just Bouye's play. I really also like the game that McKinney had yesterday. You know, he's had better games. It just wasn't a game that stuck out as, like, this dominant defensive, you know, game. We didn't have a pick. We didn't have a sack. A.J. Bouye had 11 tackles. McKinney had 9. The next closest person had 6. So basically you got 2 guys playing defense on the entire team. Both those guys looked great last night, but I just A.J. Bouye the entire game. I'll take that. He had the only 2 PDs yesterday as well. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just kind of the game in the nutshell defensively.
Yeah, my favorite play, I think, or my favorite play he had in that one was that kind of like floating post route he threw to Demaryius Thomas, where Bouye kind of came out of nowhere and tipped that one away. But my favorite play of it wasn't even the play. It was the reaction after. And Bouye is just like, you can tell he really wants to, like, celebrate and throw in the other team's face, but it's still going to be, like, 5 or 6 games. So he doesn't, like, he can't do it just yet. But you kind of see him, like, purse his lips and kind of put, like, 1 finger out. And, like, you know he wants to do so much more, but he's just waiting to, I guess, play a little bit better over time or hit his payday after this season. But, like, we're on the verge of him really, you know, like, he wants to celebrate so badly, but he's been a good boy so far.
Yeah, I saw that too. It's really pent-up celebration. You can really see it on his face.
Yeah.
Celebration,
it's like,
blue,
it's like
blue ball. There you go.
Yeah, I was going to say something else. But, hey, we're a family podcast now. Going back to Oswald one last time, we had some viewer questions problem, and I guess kind of what I took away from it, we had like 3 that were all similar. The first is that how much longer are they going to stick with Oswald? And again, I think Oswald's going to be the quarterback for the rest of this year, for all of next year, unless they start like 0-4 next year or something. Like, Oswald is the guy. They gave him all this money. They invested into him. And also, if Tom Savage was really good, they wouldn't have signed Brock Osweiler. They would have started Tom Savage and then drafted somebody in the 3rd round or whatever. You know, they didn't trust Savage at all whatsoever. And also, Savage has shown nothing in the preseason or in his 1 start he had. And he's also there in practice every single day. So I expect 0 from Tom Savage. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be a lot of us just complaining about Brock Osweiler every single week for the next year and a half is what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's 2 parts to me. There's the part of me that says, if you see a guy who's playing that poorly, he's not going to be successful as an NFL quarterback. You just got to pull him. You eventually got to cut that cord, and you got to move forward with somebody else who you got to give him a try. But we've seen how that works. We saw how that worked with Ryan Mount last year. Of course, you know, that whole situation was going to be a disaster one way or the other. But then you got to base so much on the contract, and I really think it's about the contract. Because Bill O'Brien went to Uncle Bob, "Uncle Bob, this is my guy. Give him all the money. I'll drive the dump truck." And you can't help but think that at this point in time, their two fates are completely intertwined. That Bob's going to ride Brock Osweiler all the way. He's either going to ride him into the sunset with the girl, or he's going to ride him right down into the pit of hell. And right now, I think it's pretty clear that he's heading into the pit. And I just can't see Bill O'Brien making that change. And I think a lot of it can stem from what happened last year with the whole Ryan Hoyer, Ryan Mallett thing, the indecision. I think it completely stems from that, and I'm not sure if I agree with it. Brock Osweiler now has, he has a full season of snaps, 16 games under his stat line. And I do not see an NFL starting caliber quarterback in those 16 games. I don't think that Bill O'Brien's making the right decision by not pulling him, but I could also easily be swayed that says, no, we don't change that phony right now. So it's the worst part is, it's the ultimate. It's like my dad used to say, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And right now, we're damned.
Yeah. I agree with all that, too. I really don't have anything to add. I guess the one thing I have to add is that last year we talked about, too, that Brock Osweiler's numbers were similar to Teddy Bridgewater and Brian Hoyer. Teddy Bridgewater was on rookie contract. He had been in the league for – that was his second year. Brian Hoyer is a veteran who's getting paid very little money. And so instead of – they could have gone all the way on the defense, try to make a top 10 defense and just try to get by on offense and try to do what the Broncos did last year. And then so they put all their invest all their resources in the offense, and this is what's happened so far. And so that was kind of like the path that they went down. The other question was from Texian Army. He was asking about the strengths and weaknesses of DeShone Kizer. And I don't watch college football at all. I'm not going to talk about the draft until after the year's over, because it's been a fun season so far, and I just kind of like power stick. But the one thing I want to add is that he did say he's pretty close to giving up on Brock Sucks Wiener. And I really love to have Kizer on this team. And I think Brock Sucks Wiener is one of the better puns to come up with this name. And I think that's probably the best part about Brock Osweiler's time so far in Houston. It's just a way that you can patronize him and make fun of him because of his name or celebrate him at the same time.
Yeah. DeShone Kizer. Thank you. Sorry. I have not done that study yet either. It's just way too early in the season, and I have not had a chance to watch too much college ball with my kids' schedules, my schedule. So I haven't had a chance to do that yet. Here's the deal, though, is right now we're really going to be locked into that 22nd pick again or somewhere right around there. We're going to probably make the playoffs and then get steamrolled in our first game in the playoffs. It looks just like 2015. We're not going to be in a position to take DeShone Kizer, unfortunately. And I kind of see it as a pipe dream of sorts that he's even – I mean, I get that that's who we want. I mean, the guy is a special quarterback, you know, clearly. The Steve McNair comp, that's what I – when I see him play, that's what I see. I don't think we remotely have a chance for him. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. My other Brock Osweiler one I like, too, is Brock Buttwiper. I've seen that one come up a few times also. That's a good one, too. Even if it's just like fifth grade potty humor that you can make up somebody's name is always perfect. So the rest of the AFC South, you were talking about the playoffs, and, you know, it's far from over. Like, this is going to be a tighter race than, you know, we expected last week or 2 weeks ago. And that win against, you know, Indy on Sunday night was probably the biggest win that they could have had for the entire year in some ways. But the rest of the AFC South, the Jaguars and the Raiders, they're now 2-4. Blake Bortles is still boring. You know, he hasn't shown any improvement that he needed to make this year. And the Indians, Tennessee are tied 3-4. Their game back in Houston. Andrew Luck had a game-winning drive. They won the one possession game that they have to win to stay in the hunt. And so did you watch either of these games at all?
Yes. I watched the Red Zone channel, and then I was flipping back and forth between those games occasionally. The Andrew, especially the Colts game, Andrew Luck he should sue Gregson for Evers money for just not keeping him alive. It's just really pathetic, the situation he's been thrown in there. That's a team that's just, again, I think Bill O'Brien, when we talk about Bill O'Brien, I think the most important thing is this. He's the best coach in the AFC South, but that's like also being the tallest midget. So it's really terrible. You know, the rest of the division is such a dumpster fire of poor management, poor coaching. That's why we go 5-1, 6-0 every year in the division, is because look who we're playing. And so once again, we go back to Mike Mularkey. He doesn't have a clue. Blake Bortles' inability to take a step forward has been, if you're a Glitter Kitties fan, that's a big deal because he's been pretty terrible. But, the rest of this division is really terrible. They're past. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's still been fun, though. And I'm really excited for a Thursday Night Football this week where we get Jaguars Titans, because they played probably the best game of the year last year on Thursday Night Football. And it was like 17-13. And the Jaguars won because Mariota fumbled the touchdown. They had a punt return for a touchdown also. And also the color rush uniforms are so disgusting too. And so that should be a fun game also. I get a chance to watch any of these. I usually watch all the condensed games on Sunday afternoon and Monday night. I had a fantasy basketball draft Sunday night. And then last time the Texans played, of course, so I was able to do that. But I'll catch up on this later this week. But again, both those teams are 3-4. The Jaguars are 2-4. And Houston's only 4-3. So they're only a game up. And this whole division race is far from over. The Texans aren't shooting for the playoffs at all. And then after next week, we'll start talking about playoff probabilities and odds from the Football Outsiders producers. But this week, the Texans are playing the Detroit Lions on a wasteful Sunday afternoon, which is so awesome that we don't have to stay up till 10:30 to watch this stupid football team lose or probably should lose and come back and win. And so I'm excited that we get a nice Sunday, 12 o'clock, you know, hangover game. And so the Lions, like the Indianapolis Colts and the San Diego Chargers, where they play one-possession games and are led by their offense. And Detroit is 4-3 one-possession games right now. And all the games they've played have been one possession. Even that game they got blown out by the Packers in the first half, they still came back and they won possession game. And they're 4-3 right now. And last week, Stafford came back from behind, led game and drive against the Redskins. And so do you think Matthew Stafford's a legitimate MVP candidate right now? This season, he has a completion percentage of 68%. He's thrown 15 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. He has 1,914 yards. He's averaging 7.9 yards an attempt.
Is he legit? Yeah. I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, he's certainly not been Matt Stafford-like this year. So he's got that going for him, so that's nice. He's putting up his highest ever QB rating, his highest completion percentage. He's still a guy who, even with the 4 interceptions, he's a really frustrating guy to watch for one reason, and it's because he's so insistent upon finding new and different and exciting arm angles to throw from when he doesn't need to. There are times, yeah, you want to throw the ball sidearm to get underneath the guy jumping on a screen pass or something like that, but he does it when he doesn't need to, and so it hurts his accuracy. So it's really frustrating to watch the guy play. It's horribly frustrating. I don't think he's a MVP contender. But the fact is, over the last 16 games, thank you, Andrew Siciliano, he is the first or second most accurate passer in the NFL. It's one of the two with Kirk Cousins. And you think about Matt Stafford's career, and it's like, really? Well, wait a minute. You look, yeah, well, I'll be damned. It just doesn't make sense because that's not Matt Stafford. That's never been his plan. So I see you've got the note on our notes. Jim Bob Cooter. Yeah. So Matt Stafford's been able to do this year is he's been able to let guys win and create yards after the catch. And you got to love it because he's clearly that scheme is succeeding greatly. That Matt Stafford's having a great year, that Golden Tate is finally starting to stand up along with Marvin Jones. You know, offensively, they don't suck. They're not bad. They don't have a real running back, but they don't really suck.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a good way to put it, too. With Stafford, I know Bill Barnwell wrote a really good article about him, and, you know, he's a lucky man where he works for ESPN, so he gets all these great numbers and, you know, stats and passing charts. And so he took the passing charts since Jim Bob Cooter's in the NFL, and just, like, instead of everything being focused on, like, the sideline, like, the deep middle and those locations, everything's a lot shorter. But it's shorter and spread all over the field right there. And so he's gone from predominantly being a, you know, deep passer to Calvin Johnson. So to spreading the ball out and kind of being like the ultimate Alex Smith in a way. It's also really taking advantage of their scheme, too. So Marvin Jones is going to take the third. You have some really good quick receivers. And they were like kind of the Falcons' light with Ameer Abdullah and, you know, Theo Riddick at running back, but both of them are injured right now, too. And so, and also what I really like about Jim Bob Cooter is what he's done with the screen game. He's done a really cool job at getting his athletic offensive lineman in space and done some really cool things with screen game, kind of like what Andy Reid has done, too, as well. So they're kind of like the Chiefs in that way, except Stafford's a much better quarterback than Alex Smith, actually goes for first downs. He can play from behind, and he can throw the ball deep when he needs to as well, too. But I think he's a legitimate MVP candidate so far this year based off his numbers. And then also whenever you come into that, too, the Lions are 32nd in DVOA right now. They have the worst defense in the NFL according to DVOA. They're 32nd in pass defense. Their pass defense percentage is 45.9%. Second is the New York Jets at 39.1%. And they're 25th against the run. And so this entire time, you know, Stafford's been having to come back from behind, be able to keep these games close, even with this terrible defense. And only that, he's been able to sneak by and you know, come back and win some games too, and have the Lions be 4-3 as well.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Go back a little bit to the offensive scheme of the Detroit Lions. Is how do you negate the Texans' pass rush? Well, you throw quick passes, you throw screens, you do all those things that just like what KC did to us both games in 2015, that's how you negate a strong pass rush. And that's part of the reason they're being successful. It's because they're not putting themselves, putting Matt Stafford at risk. It just had enough. But I think that Stafford's only been – crud, I just moved off of it. But he's only been sacked a couple times this year. Sorry. I had that right here. Quickly looking, scrambling, shuffling. He's been sacked 3 times this year. So, you know, they're keeping him upright. Oh, I'm sorry. He was sacked 3 times this week.
Close.
That was massive fail. He's been sacked 18 times, so I am completely wrong. I bow and beg for forgiveness, please. But that's the way you get away from not being sacked is you have a quick screen game pass, and I'm trying to salvage and not sploosh, but I think I've already splooshed. So, Matt, back to you.
Yeah, and I was going to get into that whenever we were talking about our prediction. And one of the things I'm kind of worried about the Texans this game is, like you said, the screen game, and they have really fast wide receivers. And so the Texans are thinning out in the secondary some. Kareem Jackson hasn't looked the same so far this year with a hamstring injury. He's a really big player in the slot and also against screen game with how good of a tackler he is. And so with him being hampered, that could help him some more runs too. And also that we've seen from Romeo Crennel. He did the same thing last night where he's playing 15 yards off the receivers. And that's Trevor Siemian at quarterback. That's not Matthew Stafford. And so I think the screen game is really going to have a chance to chew the Texans up on defense. And also the Texans have trouble as – they have had problems tackling as well too this year.
Yeah, and that's been really the most frustrating thing, aside from the defensive line play against the run, is really the poor tackling, because I really don't expect to see that from a Texans team. You know, I just don't. Anyway, we can move on. It's 10 after 8, and uprooted Texans are probably thinking about, hey, you know, they said the word shooter a couple of times, and I'm feeling kind of randy about this right now.
Yeah, well, he also has 2 hours on this, too, so we can make this as long and drawn out as possible for him. I was just going to pull up the Texans' broken tackle rate. So right now they're at 10.8% on plays of broken tackles, and that's one. And that's 12th, and the 12th highest. So they're a little bit below average in tackling, and they've missed 47 tackles this year so far. And Atlanta and Indianapolis are the worst tackling teams in the NFL right now. So, yeah, I mean, I can see that being a problem for the Texans in this game. And then going back lastly to the Lions defense, again, their 32nd DVOA, they have really 2 good players right now. Darius Slay's had a really bad year so far, but they have Glover Quinn and Ezekiel Ansah. They're only 2 good players. Ansah has been injured for the majority of the year with the ankle injury. And really, the only thing the Lions are good at doing is creating sacks. They don't pressure very well. And then their problems from that is that their linebackers are terrible. You know, Whitehead gets a lot of tackles, he's not that great. They can't cover. They're worse than the NFL when it comes to covering tight ends and running backs as well. They can't tackle. They're the worst team in the league against the play action as well. And not only that, but their 2 through 4 cornerbacks are terrible too. And so, like, this is, again, going back to the Indianapolis game, going back to the Chicago game where we talked about, this is the type of game where Brock Osweiler has to have a good game because he's playing against a really bad defense. And so this is the type of team where you have to throw the ball well against. You have to show that you're somewhat good, have any confidence on moving forward. And so, like, the last three possessions of the Indianapolis game, that needs to be this game. You know, he needs to have a really good one against the against the worst passing defense in the NFL.
I don't think we can really stress this enough. We saw what happened with the Cincy game last year. That was really a turning point kind of game. I think this is really an opportunity for Brock to turn this season around. And if he looks like he has really most of the season, again, we've now seen 28 quarters from Brock Osweiler, and we've seen about 2.5, maybe 3 quarters that were solid NFL starting quarterback caliber. If he does not do anything against the Lions, I mean, personally, I would pull the plug on him. That would be it. You got the bye week coming up. It's time to put Tom Savage in, let him learn the playbook. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I think we've reached that point in time. If he can't do anything against that really horrible Detroit defense, that's, you know, all the alarms sounding at that point. So he's got to do it. And he is, when you looked at him, watched him play on Monday night, he was scared. He was playing scared the entire game. I can't say I'm optimistic.
Yeah, and this is kind of like where somebody's having trouble getting their life back together, and then their family member comes out of nowhere and is like, hey, you know, I got this really great job you can have, and it'd be perfect for you, you know. And it's going to be a great opportunity, you know, blah, blah, chance to move up, nice benefits. And he's like, yeah, great. And he takes this job, and he either gets a role and gets things back together again, or he just completely craps the bed and continues to screw up. And so this is that game for Brock Osweiler. This is like his uncle giving him a job. This is a game where he needs to come out, throw the ball to his tight ends, throw the ball to his running backs, throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins a lot, you hit Will Fuller deep. And he's playing – it's just such a bad defense, too. And, like, I mean, Case Keenum threw for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns against this defense. Brock Osweiler has to have a big game. And, again, like, I'm all aboard. You know, I accept the faith that Osweiler's going to start for the next year and a half. But, again, like you said, like, if Osweiler is really bad in this game, like, if he can't complete – if he's completing three yards an attempt, if he throws about 40 times and can't complete 200 yards, I kind of think that you have to put Savage in and let him watch the bench for a little bit. And kind of what they did to Ryan Fitzpatrick, just because of how bad this defense is.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is a big deal of a game, and it doesn't seem like it, but this is really a big deal.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm gonna pull up real fast and see who the rest of the AFC South is playing this week, and then that will maybe even up the ante. Okay, the Jaguars are playing the Titans, of course, like we talked about, and then. Come on, Mr.
That's a Thursday night game. Can you believe they're putting those two on fire, dumpster trash, train running off the track as a Thursday night game? Like, dear NFL, neither team ever deserves to be on a Thursday night game again. Hugs and kisses, DFD.
Oh, I think they're perfect for Thursday night, but you want them for Monday or Sunday night. Like, let the garbage go out Thursday night. Some of the weirdos watch Thursday night football. If there's nothing else on, you know. Like, you don't have to actually watch a good game on Thursday. So that's perfect for them. But the Colts are playing the Chiefs. So we have the Colts and the Chiefs and then the Jaguars and the Titans. So, again, we can have a tie at first place if the Titans win, and then if the Colts win as well, too. So here we go. So in this game, for our predictions, we're both 5-2 at the moment. And so who do you have on this one?
Going into the season, I would have never thought I would say this about this game. But this one comes down to defensively, comes down to injuries, and offensively, comes down to Brock Osweiler being really terrible. Here's the deal. I mean, for me, from my perspective, here's my opinion, is that Matt Stafford can beat the Texans offensively. We are just kind of in that position, not having J.J. Watt. We knew it was going to be a blow. We didn't know it was going to be setting bombs off along the defensive line kind of blow. As bad as his offensive line is, but as athletic as they are, I see them beating us. And right now, I got to say, I'm going with Detroit 2013. I never thought I would say that. Even last week, I probably would not have gone with Detroit after last game, 2013 Detroit.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing as Lowell, too. I'm with the Lions, and again, it comes down to the fact that the Texans haven't been able to tackle well. They're thin in the secondary. They're having issues with rushing the passer without Watt. It's only kind of coming from Wendy Merciless right now at the moment. And then also, Theo Riddick made play this week as well, too. And Houston right now is 12th in DVOA. They're 26th against the run, 7th against the pass. And so I'm just worried about them getting out in space and throwing the screen passes, throwing the short passes, where their cornerbacks are necessarily covering, but they haven't reacted to tackle. And they've had problems doing that. And again, like, until I start seeing anything from Brock Osweiler, like, for sure, like, there, like, substantial evidence that he's going to start playing well, like, I don't really have any confidence at all, especially with how he played against Indianapolis for the first 9 possessions of that game, where he had 9 points. It's one of the worst defenses in the NFL. So I'm taking the Tigers. I'm taking the Lions also. I have them winning 28-24 in this game. And what was your exact score again?
20-13.
All right, yeah. So I have them at 28-14. You have them at 20-13. And we're 5-2, each of us right now, our time when it comes to predictions. Do you have anything else to add before the show is over?
Yeah, it sounds like we're really down on a lot of things, but and we are. I am, at least. I don't want to speak for Big Matt. But what I would like to stress is that this is still a team that's going to make the playoffs because we play in such a crummy division. And it's hard to be overly optimistic with what we're seeing offensively. And losing J.J. Watt was a big deal. And we've had so many injuries defensively. And that was going to be our core. That was going to be our basis. But we didn't talk about one thing tonight. That is, the Denver Broncos were purposely kicking the ball on kickoff so that Tyler Irvin would have to return it. Like, they were going out of their way to make Tyler Irvin, touch the rock. That's what teams think about our special teams play right now, and that is pathetic. We have so many needs on this team, and instead we drafted Akeem Hunt, who can't play football, and Tyler Irvin, while Akeem Hunt is on our practice squad. So, we talk about all the time. We rip on Rick Smith quite a bit. But this was a big deal. We needed talent in other places, and it was a poor decision to draft Tyler Irvin, and it goes back to teams want Tyler Irvin to touch the ball, and that's flat-out terrible. So when we went into the season, and Ask Football Outsiders had us as, what, the 8th best, 3rd best special team?
That was nice.
We haven't lived up to those. Yeah, we haven't lived up to those expectations, so that's problematic. That's the last thing I got to say.
Yeah, and I still can't believe those projections as well for that thing, because they were 32nd every single year for like the past, 4 years or whatever. I don't really have anything else to add. I mean, I guess for me, I always say that and I always add something because I'm stupid. But I'm not really sad about this team, and I would be a lot more sad if I wasn't writing this power rankings article every week and writing about those 4 other teams. I am watching a bunch of Jay Ajayi tape tonight. I'm going to watch some Mike Adams tape tomorrow. I'm going to write that thing. And, that's been really enjoyable, as Kenny's saying, during this whole, Brock Osweiler just, sharp fest just throughout the season. But, yeah, I mean, this is a very big game on Sunday. And I disagree with you in the fact that I don't think they're going to make the playoffs necessarily. I think it's going to be a lot tougher. I don't think they're going to be able to walk in. I think it's still – there's still 9 more games left, and they're only 1 game up ahead. And, we're going to have to see what's going to happen, though. But that's all I got. And so thanks for listening tonight, and also thanks to everyone who asked questions for us. If you enjoy the show, tell all of your friends, tell your coworkers, even the ones you don't like, tell your family. Whenever you have all these little kids come over next Monday night, trick-or-treat, you should give them a piece of candy. Say, hey, you should listen to Battlebred Radio. I'm sure they would like that more than the candy that you give them. And if you listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review the show as well. We'll be back next week at the same time, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central, and we're going to review the Texans game against the Lions. And also, look at the bye week, where we'll probably give out some imaginary halfway point awards, too. So thank you for listening. My name is Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battlebred Radio. Thanks for being on tonight, BFD.
Give them, like, jump drives with the MP3s as a podcast on them. That's what we're doing today, I promise.
Well, it's the last 3 episodes that are family-friendly, though.
It's not to learn something new.
Yeah. They gotta learn sometime.
That'd be good to me.
thought that was pretty good.